We want to get listeners on the air to talk with us this afternoon. We're going to open the lines now for questions about computers. This is our monthly Computers and You program. If you'd like to join us with a telephone call, if you've got a question about computing, give us a call. The number to call if you'd like to join us here on the air, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. We also have a toll-free number. Good anywhere you're listening, 800-222-9455. Two guests are with us this afternoon to answer our questions. Both of them are with SITES at the University of Illinois, Campus Technologies and Educational Services. And I'm pleased to welcome back to the program this afternoon Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick. Debbie is a network engineer. Jim's a wireless network engineer. And so we can take questions about computers this afternoon. They're here. They're happy to help. Hardware, software, Macs, PCs, you name it. You've got a question, we're here to help this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Good to see you. Welcome back.
Hi, Celeste. Nice to be here again.
Yeah, good. We already have a listener who's waiting for us in Chicago on line four. Let's go there. Hi.
Two things.
Okay.
First of all, I will be making a pledge after this call.
Okay.
Everyone who calls into the program to do the same.
Very
good.
I
value this program. I listen to it as often as I can. Second thing, I'm so glad wireless people are there because I have a wireless problem.
Okay.
When I boot up my computer, it says wireless networks detected, one or more wireless networks in range on this computer. Of course, I cannot connect to the Internet. And I click on the balloon. It says that wireless connection 3 not connected. And, you know, I go through the repair thing and all that other stuff, and I'm still not able to connect wirelessly. I can connect on another laptop on this same network, but not on this one that I usually travel with, that I depend on in hotels and whatnot. So, and this has happened. This happened before. I don't think I did anything to correct it, but it just seemed to mysteriously get corrected. Any suggestions?
Is the laptop that doesn't work? Is it older than the one that does?
Oh, it's newer.
Newer. Actually. Okay. The reason for that is there's some compatibility stuff. But if it's newer, I wouldn't expect that. Debbie.
I'm using XP, by the way, SP3.
And okay. That was my next question, was what operating system were you going to use?
XP, SP3, both computers.
Okay. And the wireless card on the Windows box, are you using the what we call the supplicant, which is the part of the program that actually talks to the wireless or configures it? Are you using the built-in Windows, what's called the Windows 0 configuration supplicant? Or are you using, like, if the card is an Intel or if it's D-Links, are you using an application that says IOGear, D-Link, something like that, as far as what sets the wireless settings?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I believe it's Windows.
Okay.
By the way, well, nope. I'll answer that question, and maybe you'll ask me the other question that I'm anticipating.
Well, if it's the Windows one, that's we've seen less problems on campus when people use the Windows one than the third-party supplicants, like I said, like D-Links or Intels.
Right.
My suggestion would be to go find out what the driver is for that card. Go to the manufacturer's website and download the newest Windows driver.
Okay.
And upgrade to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Check. So I assume that you have your own wireless router at home.
Yes.
You're not trying to filch off your neighbor's connection or anything. Okay.
Although it had shown up in the past, you know, and I didn't use it. But by the way, I have a Belkin router.
Okay. You might want to go into the Belkin router and make sure, because you said it worked in the past, I'm less inclined to think this is the problem, but covering all the bases, go into the Belkin router and make sure that the wireless security that it has set, that there's no settings in there that say only allow this computer's what's called a MAC address, which identifies the actual wireless card.
Okay.
So there's a possibility at my house, I have it so only my laptop, even if you know the security password, only my laptop's MAC address can actually connect to that wireless router. It's an extra thing of security. how much value it adds, I don't know, but the settings are in there, so you can actually end up messing things up if you have accidentally in the past set it so only one laptop had permission to connect.
Okay. Well, you know, this also happens to me. It has happened in the past where, well, there were a group of us connecting to a computer, and we all tried to get on. Everybody got on except me, so it sounds like it's something unique to this computer. But how do I get into the Belkin router? I mean,
Do you have another computer that's connected via wire?
Yes.
Okay, so go to that computer, and you would ask it, is it a Windows machine also?
Yes.
So you would go to start run and type CMD for the command prompt, and then you're going to type ipconfig, that's one word, ipconfig, space / all for all. It'll give you all the information about that computer's network connections and its IP configuration. There's going to be an entry that says gateway. It's going to be a number. Most likely it'll be 192.168. That's 192.168. Probably 1.1.
Or 1.254.
1.254, and sometimes, depending on the brand, it can be 192.168.0.1 or .254. You're going to find that number that's listed as a gateway, and you're going to bring up Internet Explorer. You're going to paste that into the address bar of Internet Explorer and hit Enter, and that'll bring up the login page for the Belkin router. It should.
This is on the podcast later on because I don't think I followed all of that. But after the program, will I be able to get this back?
Yeah, on our website. You'll be able to listen later. Yeah.
And you might start at Belkin's website. I'm sure that they have a fairly decent frequently asked questions site and a help site. And then the other thing, like I said, I would definitely go find the manufacturer of the laptop's wireless card.
Okay.
And update, make sure you're using the newest update. Don't use Windows Update. The Windows Update feature is not very good at actually keeping drivers up to date, especially wireless card drivers that change about every 3 to 6 months.
Right.
So you definitely want to go to the manufacturer's website to download that driver.
Right.
And not trust Windows Updates.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy the program, and as soon as I hang up, I'll be making a pledge.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call this afternoon. Good luck to you, and thank you for your phone call to 244-9455, area code 217. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, if you've got computer problems, give us a call. Two guests are here with us this afternoon to lend a hand, Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick. They are network engineers, and we can take questions about computers this afternoon at 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455. And let me mention our website. It's will.illinois.edu. So if you call in and talk with us and then later on you're thinking, well, what was it that they said? You can go to the computer, go to our website, go to the Afternoon Magazine, and there's the downloadable show right there. So that's a handy thing to have. We're getting another call in now here on Computers in You, our monthly computers program here on the Afternoon Magazine. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll free 800-222-9455. Let's go to another caller now, a listener on line one. Hello. Champaign, hi.
I have a Macintosh that has a folder with approximately 20,000 images in it, and it's locked, and I'd like to delete that folder from my computer. Do I have to unlock each individual image to do that?
Oh, that's a good question. It depends on what program locked them and how it locked them. There's I guess I should ask, I'm assuming you're probably running operating system OS 10, not the older OS 9?
Yes, OS 10.
Okay, so there is kind of a backdoor way to do it, and if you've got 20,000 files, it's probably worth it, then unlocking each of them individually. You could use the terminal program and access the Unix interface. And people who don't use Unix very often don't normally mess with that, but in this case, there is a Unix command that will just remove all those files for you without even if they're locked, if you give it all the right commands. So the command you're looking for is RM, which is a short form of remove. What you need to do is find the, are you familiar with the terminal program?
No.
Okay, it's in the utilities directory, so applications, utilities, terminal. And when you launch that, it's going to be a lot like if you ever use DOS sitting in a command line prompt in DOS, like kind of like C colon. And it's going to be sitting in your home directory. The first thing you're going to need to do is change directory to where all those files are.
Okay.
And then once you're in that directory, you need to run the RM command as the root user. So you're going to use the special command first called sudo, S-U-D-O, and then space, RM, space, star.
Okay.
And then it's going to ask you for an administrator's for your password, and you do need to do this when you're an administrator.
Okay.
And that should remove everything in the directory, and the sudo part of it gives you permission to remove anything.
Okay.
Use that command very carefully because it can remove things you want to keep too. You'll make sure you're in the right directory. CD works just like the DOS commands do. DIR does not. The command for under Unix is ls for file listing. And then you should see those 20,000 files fly by. If you don't, you're not in the right directory and you don't want to use that RM command. You can probably get some more information if you wanted to hit like Mac OS 10 hints site, how do I remove locked files? If you wanted to see it in print before you did it, so you make sure you were typing the right things.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm grateful.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Debbie Flagger and Jim Eyrick of Sites at the University of Illinois, Campus Technologies and Educational Services. Let's take another call. Listener on a cell phone line, too. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How can we help you today?
I have a problem a little bit similar to a gentleman earlier. My computer died, crashed, got a new laptop, and we have a wireless network at home. And ever since I've started with the new computer, if I'm on for very long, I have to reset my adapter all the time, the network adapter. And if my son, say, is on another wireless computer, when both of us are on at the same time, it seems to crash both of ours all the time off the network. And I've tried everything I can think of to figure it out, including what you talked about with the Belkin router and making sure it wasn't identified with one computer. And I just can't seem to figure out why that's happening.
For random crashes, I would definitely start with firmware and drivers. So the firmware on the wireless router and the drivers of your wireless cards in your laptops. The next thing to do would be to check channels. So if you're in a heavy residential area or around a business district, you may end up seeing where there's a lot of wireless in the area. And your wireless, you're contending for your neighbor with the same frequency as your neighbors, which may end up causing you also to drop off the wireless.
Although that shouldn't crash your computer.
Right. Yeah, drivers are about the only thing that in this case. If your computer's actually crashing, drivers
are... I'm sorry. Yeah, the computer's not crashing. The network is crashing. I have to reset the network adapter over and over and over.
Right. So you're doing repair or shutting off the wireless and turning it back on your laptop?
Yeah, repair usually takes care of it. Once
right.
in a while, I have to turn it off. But generally, I can just do a repair and then click not acquire new IP address, but to do the whole reset the network.
Right, which basically turns the card off and turns it back on.
Okay.
I would definitely start with drivers and firmware. So drivers for the laptop and then whatever brand you have for your wireless router, go to that manufacturer website, find out what the newest, what they call firmware, which is it's basically the operating system and software that runs on that particular piece of hardware.
Okay.
And see if the one that you have at home is the same, is an older version and you need to update. They'll have instructions on their website on how to best perform the upgrade.
Great. Okay. Hope that works. Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll keep our fingers crossed for you. Next, we go to a listener in Champaign. Line one, hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
I've got a PC laptop. I'd love to buy one of the MacBook Airs, but I don't really want to switch all over to Apple. And I was reading about their Parallels software. Sounds great in the ads, but a lot of the comments online were pretty negative. I wondered if you had any experience with that.
Well, I run Parallels for the things I need to do in Windows, and my experience is that it works pretty well. That said, though, I'm primarily a Mac user that runs a few things in Windows. I've talked to a few people that run a lot of things in Windows, and most of them have had pretty good things to say about the very most latest version of Parallels, and they weren't so nice even 6-8 months back on the previous version. So I think that's part of the newest is the best as far as that goes. There's also a couple other competing products out there for Parallels. One's VMware.
VMware Fusion, which is version 2, I think, is the one. I run that on my MacBook. I'm a Windows person that has a MacBook Pro. And the other thing to do is possibly instead of running Parallels, both of those tools basically virtualize Windows inside of the Mac. While you're loaded into Mac OS X, you can run a copy of Windows. Your other choice that's actually included as part of the package from Apple, now the license for Windows is not included, but the software is Boot Camp. So then instead of actually ever booting into OS X, unless you find yourself that you really want to convert to be a Mac person, where the virtualization software of Parallels or Fusion would be to actually set up the laptop to run Boot Camp, and then it will just boot into Windows.
Oh, my gosh. So I wouldn't even have to use Apple at all.
Nope. You get the Apple hardware at Apple's price, but, you know, it's nice hardware, and you just boot into Windows.
But I'd be completely Windows within the Apple hardware then.
Right. And you could choose to boot to Mac OS if you wanted to, but you wouldn't have to.
Oh, I didn't know that. Very cool. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick are with us this afternoon to talk about computers. My name is Celeste Quinn. Before we take our next call, I'm going to check in with Heather Miller, and we're going to need to talk a little bit here about what it is that allows us to do programs like this. Heather, it's contributions, right?
From it's your listeners. Pledge of support. Your pledge of support, and since we're talking computers, let's have you take your browser and point it to willpledge.org, and you decide the amount. But remember, AM 580 is listener-supported. Some listeners have given $25 a year, and some $1,000. Give whatever amount works for you. Just do your best. We'll use your contribution to help pay for the programs like the computer show we're doing today. The ultimate goal, though, is to keep you informed, empowered, and your computer online. So go to willpledge.org and make that call, 217-244-9455.
And keep us going here on the Afternoon Magazine, and keep computers and you on the air. Technology is wonderful, but for us mere mortals, boy, it's a challenge. And so that's why we have been doing this topic once a month now for many, many years, and it is with listener support that we keep the programming here on AM 580. Well, I want to say thanks to Heather, and we'll check in back with her a little bit later in the program. But in the meantime, we're going to do what we're here to do today, other than get you to join us as a friend of WILL, and that's to take your telephone calls and to get you some help with your computers. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next we go to Urbana, line 2. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I've got an academic question.
Okay.
When would it be advisable to upgrade a computer rather than replacing it? Let's say it's a 5 or 6 year old computer and you put a new motherboard and CPU in. What wouldn't you be getting?
Well, some of that depends on what your goal is. And I would say, in my opinion, the two things it boils down to for me are which is more cost effective and which is going to be easier to support in the long run. So if you like to fiddle with hardware, and putting a new motherboard and CPU in will raise the computer to the performance level you need for your new program or whatever reason you wanted to upgrade it, and you like doing things like that, by all means, enjoy it. And if it's cost-effective, it doesn't cost more than buying the new computer does, then go right ahead. I went through that not too long ago. I had a motherboard that all the capacitors went bad on, and I swapped it out. And I got the new motherboard, and like, oh, my power supply doesn't work. Now I need a new power supply. Because the newer motherboard took a different style connector and more power than the old one did. So part of it would be in research, part of it would be in cost. Because I did keep my hard drive and my case and, my CD-ROM drive and all that thing, those things, and I already had it, and I already had gotten the motherboard, the power supply was worth it. Had I been adding up all those costs to begin with, I might have chosen to go the other route. So The support part of it is, you know, if you don't mind fixing it when things go wrong. You know, some people like to buy an off-the-shelf box from a big-name brand like Dell or HP so that when they do have a problem, they can call the vendor. And if that's important to you, then you'd want to go out and buy a computer, not upgrade a computer. Does that help you make your decision?
I think so. Are there any things, for instance, the buses that have been changed radically in the last 5 to 10 years?
Oh, definitely. We have the newest ones, PCI Express, that works across all cards, but a big part of that one was the video card, which mostly that's where we've seen the speed increases for the buses has been getting the video cards. The newest video cards out have more processing power than most of the processors on the motherboards, actually. So that we have the PCI Express. Before that, we had the AGP, which I would guess it's Advanced Graphics Port, but don't quote me on that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's really most of the changes I've seen as far as card bus or, you know, connections from the expansion slots has definitely been just to accommodate faster and faster video speeds.
So if you're doing a lot of graphics, which most people aren't,
Most of the video card stuff has been for games.
Yeah.
It depends what kind of graphics you're doing as far as whether you need the newest and biggest video card out there.
Retouching photographs, this sort of thing.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Just any video card that can run Windows should be able to do that just fine.
Even my old, I think it has 32 megabytes of memory.
If you can open the picture up in Windows and it can handle it, I don't think the video card is going to be an issue for you.
As I said, it was an academic question. Most people, when the motherboard goes out, they just go out and buy a new computer. And it probably only costs twice as much as, say, replacing the motherboard and the CPU, unless you've got a pretty good computer to start with.
And you'll probably end up having to replace the RAM. Most likely, if the motherboard's over a couple of years old, you probably will have to upgrade to a faster, if you go to a completely different processor, which Intel and AMD are kicking those out pretty quick, is that you may end up having to replace the RAM also. So sometimes when you put the whole package together, you may have been better off just getting a new machine by the time, like I said, like by the time you run into every component that you find that you went, oh, that doesn't work now. Oh, I'm going to have to buy some more of that.
That was definitely my experience. I didn't ever go reprice a new machine, but I had an onboard video. Now I had to find a video card with the new motherboard. You know, the old power supply didn't work, new power supply. Fortunately, the motherboard I bought came with the CPU and the memory because I bought somebody's used motherboard. I didn't have to go buy that separately. But you definitely, if you think you want to just do it yourself, I'd add up the pieces and the parts and do your research real carefully and make sure you know exactly which pieces you are going to have to replace if you're doing a cost analysis of the difference. And it might be, if the generations aren't too different, that it really is cost-effective to go buy just the motherboard because you can buy just the motherboard or the motherboard, the CPU, and the RAM. It's when you don't double-check all that and you're also buying the power supply and the video card and those other pieces that it might, you know, the case is the small part of the cost. And these days, hard drives are cheap, as are CD-ROM drives. So that those aren't the expensive parts in most computers today.
The new computers, of course, have the high-speed bus for the hard drives, and that would be one important difference. But with a new motherboard, you'd be able to. That would also give you the new style hard drive bus, wouldn't it? Or wouldn't it?
Right. Most new motherboards will have its SATA.
But if you've got an old hard drive, you won't take advantage of it. Okay.
You may even get in trouble is that the newest motherboard may not even support your old hard drive connection, which was the IDE standard.
Okay. I hope that helps. We've got a couple of other listeners who are standing by, so we're going to take another call. Listener in Urbana on line 3. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a problem. I have a MacBook Pro. It's a year old. And I have a Canon printer that came as a bonus with the MacBook Pro. I also use Google for my email. When I want to print something from email or from the web, and I send that to the printer, the print comes out so faintly that it is unreadable. And it doesn't happen if I print something from a document. I've spent over an hour on the phone with the Canon people, and they can't see any reason why this is happening. And I wondered if you had any ideas.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind that I would double check is that different programs save different print settings. Like, I know if I'm in a web browser and I turn it from landscape to portrait, so lay it over on its side to print, it remembers that the next time I launch the web browser. And if I've forgotten I did that, my printout doesn't come out the way I wanted it.
Yeah, no, that's not the case. I've checked the choices. You get very few choices anyway. You get standard and standard minus one. Doesn't have anything to do with the, those other settings. And very little. And also, if anybody is interested, there's almost no good support information on using this particular printer. But no, that it's not a question of the print settings, and I don't know if maybe it has to be a problem of the web or something that the printer isn't reading correctly from these web-based documents.
Well, that's possible. In particular, the setting I was looking at is I just popped into Safari and looked, and they've got an image quality setting, but it sounds like you might have already gone through that, and you have set, like, your printer resolution and things like that, levels of gray. A quick and dirty check that works for a lot of things on the Mac would be make another account and try printing from the web in that account, so just a different user, because it could be something saved in the preferences that is maybe Safari changed a little bit and it no longer presents you with this option, but it's still stuck in your preferences file.
Oh, I'll try that. I don't even use Safari. It won't let me. So I just use Gmail and my local provider. Safari hasn't been very helpful either. As far as it won't let me in because I don't have the correct password and there's no way for me to find out what the correct password is. So
typically, Safari doesn't. It might have a password to autofill things, but it should actually. It's just the web browser.
Right, but when I go to it won't let me do anything. This box comes up and says, you don't have a password, and that's another part of the thing that's stuck.
Definitely try making a new user because that definitely sounds like a preferences file kind of problem.
Okay, a new user. Okay, I'll try that.
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay, hope that helps and. What a wacky kind of thing to have happen. You can't get in here. What do you mean I can't get in here?
It's my computer.
It's my computer. That's right. Let's take another call. A listener on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. With any luck, we'll get through this. I'm not too familiar with computers. Anyway, we have an HP laptop computer, and we're talking on Skype to a friend of ours in China, and we can hear her, but when we transmit to her or to if my husband calls me in the house, it's muffled and hard to understand. So we're trying to figure out, we think it's probably in our computer. It's about, I think, 3 or 4 years old, maybe 5.
Okay. Are you using an external microphone or the one built into the laptop?
We're using a little... We have this two little plug-in things, one pink and one green.
Okay.
And you can put it on your ear. But we found we only had to use one. Then we discovered we didn't have to use either one, and we can hear her.
Okay. Well, the green one is for the microphone, for the speaker. And the pink one, I believe, is the standard for the microphone. I would definitely start with if it's muffled or it's hard to hear, is that this is a microphone problem.
The first thing that comes to mind, if you can hear it, even though you don't have those things connected, I would go into the sound area in the control panels, and I would check to be sure what it's using for audio out and audio in. It sounds like her voice might be coming out of the speakers on the laptop instead of through the sound out to those things you've plugged in. And I would definitely check that. There's a place to look there and says, what am I using? And it'll have a list, and it'll have one picked, and it'll have something like built-in speakers or line out. And line out means it would be coming out through those connectors you plugged in and going to whatever's on the other end of that, if it's a headset or a little system that sits on your desk with a speaker and a mic.
Can can we keep those little the green and the pink plug-ins in and still talk to her without putting that thing on our ear, because that way both of us can talk?
There's no reason that you should have to. The only reason that I could think of that you would want to use, like, it sounds like the green one is some sort of earpiece, like you'd just like you'd have on a cell phone or whatever. Uh-huh. Also, is so you don't get feedback, so that the her voice doesn't then go back into your speaker and she just hears herself on an echo. So that is a reason not to use or to use the headphones instead of the speakers built into the laptop or external speakers that would sit on your desk. So I would definitely look into, or maybe see if somebody, perhaps the ones you have are defective or they're not being set up right. So I would look into a different microphone and speaker system. You should be able to get a splitter so that you could both wear headsets.
Right.
And so you could both hear, but it's still, there's not a problem with feedback into the Skype, into the microphone.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. Did you want to add anything, Debbie? No. Okay. Well, let's go on and take another call. A listener in Aurora, line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I hope that you hadn't talked about this previous. I missed the first part of your show. I have this Ultra Antivirus 2009 I got on my computer. Do you know anything about this? It's a pain in the neck, and I'd like to get rid of it, but I don't know how.
That just sounds like spam to me, or like adware.
Scary.
But we're gonna Google for it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Ultra. What is it called?
It's called Ultra Antivirus 2009. Now, if one day there was a pop-up when I was doing some search on my computer, and it looked like it had the Microsoft emblem on there, and I clicked on it, and it's just been nothing but a pain ever since.
It is definitely malware, as Debbie found out, and I quickly did also in Google. So there are instructions on the Internet on how to remove this from your computer.
It's not really an antivirus software. It tricked you into installing it by calling itself antivirus, and it's actually not doing nice things to your computer.
You're absolutely right about that. I'm not too computer smart, but is it very difficult? You think it might be difficult to get that off on my own?
I haven't read through the instructions. Some of these can be really bad. There's a lot of pages that are offering step-by-step instructions. So I would just start with Google and Google for that the name of the product. And they're like I said, the first 10 hits are all removal of.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is The Afternoon Magazine, our monthly show about computers. Our guests this afternoon are Jim Eyrick and Debbie Flieger. They are with CITES at the University of Illinois. CITES stands for Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services. I was leaving information out there for a while. I don't know why. I guess when I was typing, I was a user error. Anyway, if you've got questions about computers, listeners, give us a call this afternoon. Debbie and Jim will lend you a hand. They will help you out. So here are the numbers if you'd like to join us on the air. If you've got a question about computers, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL. And our toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let's take another call. A listener in Joliet, line 4. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I've got a question about Outlook Express. And you hear about viruses all the time. And I was wondering if it works so you don't get a virus if you right-click on the message and then choose properties and then read the message in that respect. Are you still able to get the viruses through the line that way?
That I don't know. This is the first that I've heard of this method. I've never been a big Outlook Express user, which is the built-in, for those that don't know, Outlook Express is the Microsoft Windows built-in mail client up till Vista, which then they renamed it Mail. But XP and above was called Outlook Express. The big thing is that there's some settings in Outlook Express, depending on what version you have, about shutting off attachments, which is mostly where you're going to get viruses from. So if you tell it that it can't download attachments, that's a pretty good protection from getting infected.
You know, when I use a very similar feature on my Mac, and I say don't download attachments or download inlined images, unless I'm reading it and say, oh, I want to see this, and then I get to click on them and they load in. That way, if it's something from somebody I trust, I can see them, and if it's somebody else, I can't.
Yeah, well, that's where, you know, you'll see somebody on there that that you're not familiar with, you know, that you usually don't get messages from, and I was just wondering if you did it in that way, you know, if you were safe. That was the only thing.
It would depend on whether or not that keeps it from downloading things, and I can't say that I actually know. Jim's looking on the web maybe, but...
Is there a way to preview without opening?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I think you can. You can kind of look at the message, but it's you know, it's in the properties format. You just do the properties, and then you can look at the message, and you can, you know, if it's a graphics file, it comes up in garbage. You know what I mean? But I just wondered if it was safe enough to look at it that way before you really did it the original way. You know.
Honestly, I don't know. Yeah. If the messages show up as just basically you're seeing it as as code, then you're probably pretty. It's okay. Again, I think there's better ways to do this with telling Outlook to not download attachments and not show inline messages unless you specifically say it's okay. I know that I use Thunderbird, and Thunderbird I have it set where anytime a message comes in that has inline graphics and attachments, I actually have to click a button and say, okay, this is a legitimate email. Now show me the full message with graphics and everything.
Yeah, so if when you click on that review button, you see only the words and you can't see any of the pictures, it might be safer. But I don't think we can tell you for sure that it's safe.
I'll check out that Thunderbird. That sounds better.
I really like it. I've been using it since before it was version 1, and I believe they're in version 2 or 3 now.
Okay. Next, we take a call from a listener in Champaign on line 1. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm the parent of 2 students, both of whom have recently needed to purchase new computers, and they're telling us that the lifespan of a laptop is 3 years. Both of them have been at UIUC, and we suggested they go take them to the laptop clinic at site. So the next time the computers fail, what computer do you recommend? Which ones do you see the least? My husband and I use Macs. They've had different, you know, brands of computers. So I will hang up and listen, and thank you very much for this wonderful program.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Well, I got to say, I like the Macs. That's Jim gave me a funny look, but I've been using Macs for a really long time, and I really like them. At the same time, I would say in picking a computer, it depends on what you need to do. If one of your children is in, say, the business school, they work almost entirely on Windows. While you can buy a Mac and run Windows on it, like we mentioned earlier in the program, it is expensive hardware for running Windows, especially if you really are going to replace it every 3 years. Most of the time, if you use a notebook and you carry it around, and even if you're very careful, it gets banged up a little bit and things like that, 3 years is about the expected lifespan. The warranty from Apple, the extended warranty you can buy, will only extend it to 3 years. They won't extend it past that, and there's a reason for that. Now, if you treat it more like a desktop, it sits at home 98% of the time, and you just take it with you occasionally, you're going to get more than 3 years out of it, you know, as long as it's still fast enough for what you want to do. Typically, the hardware, when it's sitting and being treated like a desktop, doesn't go bad any faster than a desktop, as long as you really don't mess around with it. You know, think about, you got to close and open the lid all the time, things like that. There's wear and tear on it, even just by using it. Even if you don't haul it around a whole lot.
Would the tiny ones make more sense for carrying around a lot and then using either the desktop or the laptop at, you know, in your apartment or your home?
It gets back to the same question of what you need to do. Mm-hmm. If you do a lot of graphic arts, you know, what part of school are you in? You know, I would go with
art and design or business.
You know, or engineering.
History or, right.
You know, I would go by whatever their unit that they're in school for recommends for that group, because most units have a suggested computer in terms of what software packages you're going to most likely be needing and how easy those are to come by for what you're doing.
Okay.
I think that after 3 years, one thing, even if you find that you've taken good care of the laptop and even the hinge works, is that the battery is the one thing that definitely – the battery is something that 3 years is about the lifetime of a lithium ion battery or lithium polymer, whatever they happen to use in the laptop. And that's actually it's not a function of how much you actually use the laptop or how much you have it plugged in or charging. Is that lithium actually just the batteries actually age, and they lose capacity over time. So sometimes you can actually find if you're like, you know, my laptop's still pretty good. It does all, it, you know, surfs the internet just as fast as I ever want it to. But geez, the battery lasts 40 minutes and it used to last 2.5 hours. You could probably go find a new battery for it and you'd be happier with it again.
If you can find a battery that was truly manufactured new. If you found that one was made 3 years ago when your laptop was and they changed the model, it's going to be just as old as the one that you got with
right,
it. And that's one of the tricks, that you got to find one that's currently being manufactured, not just an old one still in a box someplace.
Right. Okay. New old stock is definitely not good for lithium batteries.
Okay. Let's squeeze in one more caller. Vermilion County, and then we'll have to wrap it up this afternoon. Vermilion County, line two. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a Dell computer that's about a year and a half old, and it came with Windows 98. And there's something that comes on the screen that tells me that new downloads are available. And I have tried to download, you know, what it says about three different times, and it downloads everything but what's called a service pack number 3. And I wonder what I'm doing wrong.
I think probably Service Pack 3, that's probably Windows XP, not 98. Does that sound right? I'd hate to think that somebody sold you a new computer a year and a half ago with Windows 98 on it.
Oh, no, it's not a 98. It's not the, what did you say,
XP? Well, Service Pack 3 is the newest Service Pack for Windows XP, which was released several months ago or more. Are you on dial-up or on some sort of high speed?
It's a satellite connection.
Okay. It should be able to download updates pretty good. If you have a problem with where the Windows update doesn't work for something like this where it's Service Pack 3, you can actually go to Microsoft's website. And let's just go ahead and type it and see if it – let me check this. Basically, you're going to go to Microsoft's website and you can find the download and just download it yourself to your own hard drive. And then you don't have to – let the update software download it for you and wait for it. And like you said, it downloads everything, but it never gets to download that. Is that
right.
You can go to download.microsoft.com and there's a search bar. Enter it into it what you are looking for. And I believe that they'll come up and they'll show you the ones that are the full download on your own outside of Windows upgrade or update.
Yeah, and then once you've got it downloaded to your hard drive, you can run it. It installs. And then the next time you run updates, it won't need to download that one.
Okay. There we've got to leave it. We're out of time. Thanks
okay.
so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we'll see you later.
Yeah,
okay.
I think Peter's in for the next month or two.
Okay.
So I think we're in here in
June.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's just
okay.
June. Yeah.
We'll come in with your flip-flops then.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay.